Is your appetite sometimes out of control? Are you unable to stop eating even when you're full? Download our new Intelligent Medicine video, Defensive Eating, Taming Your Addiction to Food. There's a physiological basis for food addiction. The food industry has gripped our brains using powerful food science. Find out what we can do about it. Go to DearHoffman.com to download this important video. We will arm you with proven strategies to change your eating behavior forever. Go to DearHoffman.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Today's theme is intravenous therapies. And so why is more sometimes better when it comes to vitamins and supplements? Well, one of the fundamental principles of chemistry that you'll learn in high school chemistry is the law of mass action, which means that if you want a chemical reaction to proceed, you load it up on the entry point. You push the reaction from the left to the right. The arrow goes to the right. Unless you're writing in Hebrew, then the arrow goes to the left. This plus this equals that. And then you get the result. And in the body, there are a lot of chemical reactions, a lot of enzymatic reactions. These are reactions that create structure and provide energy and create repair and promote immunity, and so on and so on and so on. And one way to push these reactions is to load the left side, and through the law of mass action, things are going to move better through sometimes a metabolic choke point. There are metabolic choke points in the bodies of people who are ill or who are genetically challenged. And we all have our genetic Achilles heels, and some of us require more of certain things to feel normal. This is actually the principle of orthomolecular medicine, which was originated by Linus Pauling. That's why Linus Pauling was a mega vitamin fan. He believed that you would take, a lot of people say, well, just eat a balanced diet, you get all the vitamins you need. Well, in orthomolecular medicine, we actually used chemistry and biochemistry to straighten out problems in the body by pushing a little harder with higher doses of certain things. So let's take a look at vitamin C. In part one, I talked about the Myers cocktail, which is magnesium, B vitamins, and vitamin C. What about high-dose intravenous vitamin C? What's the rationale for that? Well, way back in 1949, a guy named Klenner, who was a pioneer in intravenous vitamin C, did research on conditions that were really hard to treat in those days. Remember, 1949 was amidst the polio epidemic, and there was no way to treat that. And he actually published successfully some studies that showed that patients with polio did better when they were given high-dose intravenous vitamin C. This never got adopted because all the buzz and excitement was about the vaccine and not about some harebrained nutritional treatment. But he also demonstrated chickenpox, measles, mumps, and encephalitis, a viral infection, could be at least ameliorated with intravenous vitamin C. Published several studies. It's in the literature going way back to the 1940s and 50s. In 1981, a guy named Cathcart, and I knew this guy in my early career. I actually met with him several times. I even went to Washington, D.C. with Dr. Cathcart to present some of our information on treatments for HIV. We met with Tony Anthony Fauci, who's now head of the NIH. He was head of the Infectious Disease Division at that time. And we presented, alongside Senator McGovern, information about natural approaches to HIV. Of course, they listened politely and then ignored us. But there was literature that suggested that, again, no magic cure here, but that intravenous vitamin C could at least shorten the duration and ameliorate hepatitis and even HIV. And to this day, I have patients with hepatitis and HIV who come to the office on a regular basis. I have an HIV survivor. He's doing extremely well, who pretty darn near died in the 1980s. But I can't claim that intravenous vitamin C is the sole thing that helped him. But the use of conventional medication, highly aggressive antiretroviral therapy, combination of drugs, drug cocktail, plus good nutrition, supplements, and intravenous vitamin C. He is a, I guess we're now talking like a 30-plus year survivor of HIV, because he probably contracted in the 1970s. There's potential was demonstrated against viruses. In 1988, following in the lead of Linus Pauling worked with Ewan Cameron in the 1960s and 70s to demonstrate that vitamin C could fight a lot of conditions, but in particular he was interested in cancer. And they did some intravenous work, but then this was put to the test. He made claims that this was going to be helpful for cancer, but then it was put to the test by a guy named Charles Martel. Now, Charles Martel was an arch foe of anything that smacked of alternative or nutrition, and he was at the Mayo Clinic, and he sought to demonstrate that vitamin C was bunk. So what they did to disprove the efficacy of vitamin C, they took a bunch of patients who were end-stage cancer patients who had not responded to anything, and they were dying of metastatic cancer on their last legs, and they gave them 10 grams of oral vitamin C. And, of course, they all died. None of them improved. And they said, well, that should be the death knell of vitamin C research, because we proved that it's not efficacious. Well, first of all, the selection of the patients is a little disadvantageous to the hypothesis vitamin C could help. Vitamin C is beneficial, but it, you know, in very, very advanced end-stage patients, maybe not. But also the mode of administration, oral, and the amount was just insufficient. Okay? And therefore, this set back intravenous vitamin C and cancer research for a long time, because they said, well, you know, look at that New England Journal of Medicine article, or that JAMA article in the 70s. Actually, it was in the 90s, I think. They did it maybe in the 80s or 90s. I remember it. They said, well, you know, we can dispense with that. Well, in 1988, Dr. Reardon, who is in Oklahoma, became a big advocate of IV vitamin C for cancer. And again, he was ridiculed and disparaged. But what we're seeing now is a resurgence of interest in vitamin C for cancer. And there are actually some new studies that are quite interesting. Vitamin C also has been proposed by Dr. Thomas Levy. He wrote a book entitled Vitamin C, Infectious Diseases and Toxins, as a treatment for what then loomed as a potential epidemic, West Nile virus. Of course, we've had near misses with viruses that we can't really cure, SARS and Ebola, and every time one of these things comes up, somebody is willing to explore the efficacy of vitamin C against these viruses. We have some studies on vitamin C. One that I'm looking at here is vitamin C administration may benefit critically ill patients. Research shows that there's a lot of oxidative stress in critically ill patients, and IV vitamin C is found to be extremely effective at reducing circulatory shock. This is one of the reasons why when I was injured with a broken hip, I said, give me, you know, high-dose intravenous vitamin C and magnesium. I said, no, well, we'll wait until you become dramatically magnesium deficient, then we'll come back and give it to you, which they did, but they didn't give me any vitamin C. Okay, so the problem with oral vitamin C is that oral vitamin C produces plasma concentrations that are tightly controlled. Only intravenous administration of vitamin C, and I'm reading here from a paper called Vitamin C Pharmacokinetics, Implications for Oral and Intravenous Use, the Annals of Internal Medicine. Because efficacy of vitamin C treatment cannot be judged from clinical trials that use only oral dosing, the role of vitamin C in cancer treatment should be reevaluated. And indeed, it has been. The idea is that oral vitamin C is an antioxidant, and that's good, but giving an antioxidant to a cancer cell isn't going to make that cancer cell die or inhibit it. In fact, it may even help it. So that there's not a strong basis for believing that oral vitamin C, which can only achieve moderate tissue concentrations, can do much. However, when you give it intravenously at doses of 50, 75, 100 or more grams over a course of several hours, you get a very high concentration of ascorbate in the bloodstream. And ascorbate actually creates the ascorbyl radical, which is a free radical, which attacks the cancer cell. But conventional cells are less affected and, in fact, are pretty well protected from the effects of ascorbyl radical. You actually get, and this has been demonstrated, you actually get hydrogen peroxide production in the tissue, and this is a little akin to administering ozone or hydrogen peroxide therapy. These are in vogue now for treating cancer, but I don't see why you need to do that when actually high-dose vitamin C will do it, and with less potential danger or harm, because we know pretty much that vitamin C at high doses is safe. So, these are some of the new potential applications of high-dose vitamin C. I have several patients under my care who have very, very advanced cancers. And the intravenous vitamin C, I won't claim it is, it's a panacea, it's a standalone therapy. I still encourage them to get conventional therapy. By the way, intravenous vitamin C is compatible with conventional cancer therapy. There's no contraindication to getting intravenous vitamin C. We've interviewed Dr. Jeannie Drisco, who is the head of integrative medicine at Kansas University Medical College, and they're doing very extensive trials with with full protocols and full informed consent and approval of their research committees over there, where the oncology departments are actually cooperating with the integrative medicine department by sending patients over literally sometimes on the same day when they get their chemo and then they get their high-dose intravenous vitamin C. And it's sort of a double whammy against the cancer. So the latest is that there's, and this is something that just hit this week, high-dose vitamin C has proven to be effective against cell lines of cancer, colon cancer cell lines, that are very resistant to conventional chemotherapy. This is one of the problems, is that chemotherapy works and then it doesn't. Sort of like antibiotics work and then bugs become resistant to antibiotics. Same thing with cancer. Cancer mutates until it becomes resistant to many forms of chemotherapy. But in one cancer cell line that is known for its resistance to chemotherapy, it was found that high-dose vitamin C, at levels achievable by intravenous administration, have a strong inhibitory effect on those cancers. Now, this is still a bit of a far cry from saying we've got definitive proof in human subjects that vitamin C cures cancer or helps cancer. The work is ongoing. I'm not conducting a research trial in my office. I've been doing intravenous vitamin C, as I said, for nearly three decades. But there's some people who are compiling the data, and thank goodness for them, because they're in research institutions. And I think you're going to see more and more interest around intravenous vitamin C, and in particular cancer, but also for its antiviral effects. And, you know, we have so many viral infections, very tough to treat, and intravenous vitamin C could make a difference against them. Patient comes in with a cold or flu or under the weather, or this is something I do myself, is I take high-dose intravenous vitamin C, and we knock off about half the time that patients are going to be sick. So a very important tool in our armamentarium against infection. I want to say a couple of things about glutathione, because glutathione is something that it's hard to administer orally. You take glutathione orally, it's a tripeptide, it gets digested and broken down, and it doesn't really get absorbed and go to where it needs to go, to, say, the brain or to the liver for detoxification. So we give it intravenously. And Dr. David Perlmutter has been very well known for having documented the efficacy of intravenous glutathione for patients with neurological disorders, including Parkinson's disease. He actually has some dramatic videos showing before and after. And our patients with neurological disease, we give them glutathione drips or glutathione pushes. And there's a clear benefit in terms of their motion, in terms of their clarity. We also do it for some of our patients who have toxic issues, patients who have viral issues, chronic fatigue. It can be very helpful. I have here in front of me a study, intravenous glutathione and claudication. Glutathione can help with circulation in patients who have painful walking due to poor circulation. There are some studies looking at intravenous glutathione in the treatment of Parkinson's disease. What other patients benefit from glutathione? Patients with chronic fatigue syndrome, patients who are suffering from the side effects of chemo, patients who have high levels of mercury in their system, patients who have liver disease. We have, for patients with liver disease, we give them intravenous vitamin C with glutathione, and sometimes alpha-lipoic acid intravenous, which is also helpful for the liver. There's even some studies looking at patients using glutathione for singers. We have an ENT in New York, Dr. Benjamin Asher, who has a big clientele of artists and singers. And before a performance, they'll sometimes get some intravenous glutathione. I think I've been talking a little bit too much today, so maybe I'll go to the office and get some intravenous glutathione later. Acute hearing loss. There's some studies that show that glutathione is helpful for restoring the sensory organs in the ear, in the inner ear. And then there are autistic kids who are getting either intravenous or topical glutathione in a patch for autism. Studies have shown that intravenous glutathione is helpful for reducing the side effects of chemotherapy with cisplatin. That's particularly commonly used in women with ovarian cancer. So these are some of the potentials of intravenous therapy. And, you know, there are other various concoctions that can be administered intravenously. One of the arguments in intravenous therapy is whether to give preservative-free or regular IV materials. Now, preservative-free materials, they don't have any of the chemicals that are added. And however, when you use a preservative-free vial of, say, a B vitamin or C or magnesium, you have to be extremely careful. There's the potential for it to become contaminated, and then a patient can develop an infection. So also the cost factor, they're enormously more expensive than the standard vials. Some patients need them and are willing to pay a premium for preservative-free ingredients. I mean, why get preservatives? I mean, I get it. When it comes to the supermarket, you want to get preservative-free foods. But when it comes to IVs, there have been some issues of contamination with doctors administering preservative-free IV materials. And so that is sometimes an issue. You know, there's some real challenges to IV therapy, and I'm experiencing them as a doctor. There's, of course, a lot of, you know, scrutiny of doctors who administer IV therapies because it's kind of considered unconventional. There's more and more expense associated with IV materials. The price of my IV materials, when I talk about a vial of B vitamins, it went from $20 to over $200 because of new regulations that have been imposed in the wake of some episodes of contamination. And compounding pharmacies are not making them. There's a real shortage of EDTA, which we use for chelation therapy. By the way, chelation therapy, another thing that was thought to be kind of quacky for so many years while I was administering it, and in a 2013 study called the TACT study, it was vindicated and it was shown to be beneficial for cardiovascular disease. So there's you know, some cause for optimism about the acceptance and validation of intravenous therapies after so many years. I'm very happy that I stuck to my guns and have continued to use them despite a lot of pressures not to use them. They've been very beneficial for my patients, and I think science is finally catching up on intravenous vitamin C as well as other intravenous formulas for helping patients recover from from serious diseases, or even minor episodes of colds and flus. I think that there's a real place for these types of therapies, and I'm really happy that I've stuck to my guns. There's a companion article to this at drhoffman.com if you want to check it out, and I'll be reporting to you on the ACAM conference that I'm attending, if there are any new innovations or any new breakthroughs that I've learned about. And that's why you listen to Intelligent Medicine, to be apprised of all the latest findings in the field of complementary and alternative medicine. Thanks very much for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.